Welcome to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
I'm Lucia Kelly, expert at applied analysis and designated rescuer.
And I'm Talia Franks, media critic, fanfic enthusiast, and I am cataclysmic and impossible.
And we're here today for a Wibbly Wobbly minisode.
Yay! Woo! Today we're talking about Flux, the Halloween Apocalypse, the first episode of Series 13 of Doctor Who.
Flux, the Halloween Apocalypse, aired on October 31st, 2021. Halloween. It was written by Chris Chibnall and directed by Jamie Magnus Stone.
Reminder that time isn't a straight line. It can twist into any shape, and as such, this is a fully spoiled podcast. We might bring things in from later in the show, the comics, the books, the audio dramas, or even fan theories and articles.
With that out of the way, the flux is imminent. I forecast incredible suffering, vast bloodshed, a conflict that will dwarf all that has come before. The greatest of times is upon us. We must be ready to take advantage. So let's get in the TARDIS.
IMDb synopsis says, on Halloween, all across the universe, terrifying forces are stirring. From the Arctic Circle to deep space, an ancient evil is breaking free. And in present-day Liverpool, the life of Dan Lewis is about to change forever.
This is the one where the TARDIS throws the Doctor and Yaz on a bed with handcuffs and they still do not get the message. I am in pain.
I have decided that Yaz is not 19.
Like, I mean, she's not coded 19.
So I've decided in all further fanfic and all further discourse, Yaz is going to be late 20s, early 30s. Like, this is just what I'm going with. Mandip Gill is like 32 or something. I don't know. I don't have time to look her up. We set a timer. So I've just decided she's going to be early 30s. Like, this is just how I'm going to work it in all further headcanons, all further fanfics I write, she's early 30s. Anyway.
Do we want to just very quickly, for our dear and dedicated listeners, explain what's going on? Because from their perspective, we're somewhere in season one.
We just finished season one. So yeah. What are we doing right now, Lucia?
Well, Talia, basically, we recognize that a lot of people don't want to come with us on the journey all the way back to season two, and that it might be fun to talk about what's actually happening right now, like literally right now in Who Land. So what's going to happen is every week while Doctor Who is actually airing, Talia and I are going to do a quick mini-sode. It's not going to be the length of our regular episodes. We're literally just doing reactions, maybe like a tiny, tiny little bit of analysis and speculation, just sort of what we thought. We're just going to put it all out there for you.
Yeah. And at the end of the episode, we're going to, instead of doing our normal thorough grading, we're just going to do a general, is the episode fun, funky, or fabulous?
Foul.
Funky, fabulous, and foul. Just a general blanket decision. And once we get all the way through all the other seasons, in our normal format of deep analysis, we will do full episodes on series 13. But that's probably not going to be for another like 5 years.
So it's something to look forward to, you know?
Something to look forward to.
In the meantime, let's talk about these handcuffs, because Doc, what are you doing with two pairs of handcuffs in your pocket? Voice activated, and the safe word, yeah, there was a little bit of memory loss there, I'm not going to blame you for it, but the safe word wasn't release, it was relief. And I just want to talk. I think you need to talk to Yaz, like, with your words, maybe. I think maybe this is a conversation to have with her with words, and not like, I think we've moved past the point of subtle innuendos. Especially, if we want things to actually happen.
Especially because if we think about the fact that if Yaz and the Doctor are not a couple, which is upsetting to me. But if they are not, the last person that the doctor is likely to have used handcuffs involving a safe word with is Missy.
Oh!
Especially because she says that she might have been Scottish the last time that she used these, which implies Capaldi, which implies that he and Missy were using handcuffs.
Do you think Missy gave them to them?
Maybe.
Do you think maybe they were a gift? What an opener.
Sorry, I didn't want to put you in your feels there. This episode is wild. There is so much going on that I don't even know what to talk about. Also, the Centauran throwing shade at the other guy. Oh my God.
Okay, I could not, because the Centaurans are very sort of stoic and straightforward in their delivery. I could not tell whether he was complimenting or degrading the other person. Like, I could not honestly tell whether disgusting was meant to be like, "You're disgusting, Welish," or like, "You're disgusting." Like, I could not tell. There were no tone indicators. What do you reckon? Because sometimes, like, they're all just moldy little potatoes together. Like, I don't know. Is that a compliment?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's a good point. That's a good point. I had not considered.
Also, maybe it was just the hologram, but I don't think he looked that bad. I think he looks like an average Sontara.
I think they looked the same.
Right?
Maybe
it's like a filter, you know, like an Instagram filter, like you could make yourself look a bit more starchy.
I also have to say, one of the things I loved about how chaotic this episode was how you were just dropped in the middle of an episode, like just dropped in the middle of the story. I love things being en medio res. Like,
I am not such a big fan of it, I've got to say.
I do love it. I love figuring things out as we go along. What I don't love is how this is the third season opener where Chris Chibnall killed the black person.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What the heck?
What the heck? And it's not just, and like, I've seen critiques where it's like, oh, he killed bi people too. And first of all, both of the people he killed were queer coded.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah. And
so queer coded.
Queer coded, like to the point where I would say that all three of the black people killed in season openers were black women, except for the fact that I'm not sure this person was a black woman and not non-binary, because so queer.
The mad non-binary vibes. Like, this was an elder gay and their baby gay going out, like, checking out the scene. Like,
yeah, I have a whole fanfic planned. Like, it's outlined. I'm just waiting until Flux is over so that I can make sure that I don't do anything that like contrasts too wildly with what's going to happen with the rest of the season. It's gonna happen. But yeah, like, the fuck, Chris Chibnall. Dan Lewis feels so unnecessary. We could have had two women in the TARDIS doing their investigations. Like,
of the world and maybe each other's bodies, we don't know.
Like, and then this white man has to be there for what? Like, the unfortunate thing is that I like Dan. I didn't want
to. No, it's so frustrating. I was watching this and I'm like, I'm not going to like Dan. I'm going to make a stand. I'm going to be a good feminist. And then Dan was delightful. I hate it. He's so, like, he's precious. He's a history buff. He wants to, like, be a tour guide, but he doesn't have the qualifications. And I'm like, I hate that I identify with this so much. How dare you be? How dare you be you? But he is a soup hater, and I can't stand by that. What the fuck? You hate soup? Dan, who hurt you?
I don't know. Maybe he was allergic to the soup. I'm allergic to soup.
Sorry. I mean, I did kid, but we know who hurt Dan. Society hurt Dan because he's not doing good. Things are going wrong for him in many spaces.
Yeah, it's because of Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
Dan is a thinly veiled Brexit criticism.
Very thinly. It's like. Think of how much Marmite you put over the toast. It's less than that.
I think I was talking to some people about this, and it's because, and it makes sense actually, because if they use a person of color to make this Brexit criticism, all the racists would just be up in arms. But they're using a white man to do it. So
yeah. It would be great if we even had like a white woman, so we could have an all-woman TARDIS. But given that the choice to make Dan a white man is actually very specific, because it's meant to be this criticism, and it's meant to be like, they very specifically made him a white man and a criticism of Brexit together to make a point, right? Given that, I can forgive it slightly.
Like, if they're going to make him a white man, at least they're...
So can we talk about his sweet date? I love Diane.
I love her, except why did he make her wait by herself in a dark alley?
I was about to say, like, that was not his choice. He was being tied up by a dog. But
it was a dark street at night, and I don't know. But also, like, from the minute that they said it was not a date and he was definitely going to be there, I was like, oh no, this is Doctor Who.
How would you curse it like that?
That date is not happening.
I do appreciate someone who like recognizes how much of a mess their crush is and still jumps in 2 feet forward. Like, she knows exactly what's happening. She's like, yep. I want to kiss him on the lips. I hate this for me, but I'm going.
Yeah. I also appreciated that it was two older people awkwardly falling in love. Because usually when you see like awkward first dates and people like navigating relationships, it's always young people. And it's like, no, it's like women exist over 35. I don't actually know how old this actress is, but she looked at least 35. I liked this episode. I liked this episode a lot. There was so much going on, though.
Well, what's so exciting about this is that, so this is very much like part one of act one of this story. We are still very much in the introduction. And what's so exciting is that this is actually returning to the roots of Old Who. There are, of course, standalone Old Who episodes, but particularly in like sort of first Doctor to third and fourth Doctor era, it was not unusual to have stories span over like a good 7 to 8 episodes. So it's really kind of funky that funky in a good way. I'm aware we're about to use funky in a bad way later on. But it's really cool that they've decided, as you know, sadly a send-off to the beautiful Jody who's given us so much, that they're doing this kind of huge overarching story when so often in modern television you're kind of given, if you are going to do it a bigger story, it's two episodes at most. Like, if you're pushing it, maybe three.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited. So, yeah, so we've got a bunch of different introductory stuff. We're jumping all over the place. End of time, beginning of time, edges of the universe, Liverpool in multiple years.
I'm really curious about Claire. I want to know what's going on. The Weeping Angels were kind of terrifying and freaky, and I loved them for once after, like, the Weeping Angels had gotten so desensitized to them, but I was like, oh my God, the Weeping Angels are terrifying again.
Yeah.
Also, Claire knew who the doctor was, but met them in the past. But, like, her whole situation is fascinating to me. I'm so excited to see where she goes. Also, one other quick thing before we move into the funky, fabulous, and foul. I love how competent and confident Yaz is with the TARDIS now. She knew all that lingo and how to pilot the TARDIS. Yaz knows how to pilot the TARDIS better than any companion that we've seen in the modern era.
Yeah, it was really evident just how, like, despite the fact that the Doc and Yaz, despite not officially being a couple, definitely need to go to couples therapy, it is, like, so cool to see how in sync they are and just how knowledgeable Yaz is. And also very interesting, particularly the very first scene between Yaz and Dan, just how much of the Doctor's kind of presentation style that Yaz has adopted. Like, mm-hmm. The way that Yaz introduces herself to Dan is very clearly her mimicking the Doctor and trying to be the Doctor to Dan, which is a fascinating power dynamic, which I'm sure will get explored.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that was explored with Clara a lot, where Clara tried to almost be the Doctor to an extent that was really to her detriment. And Clara was almost not corrupted exactly, but, like, it drove Clara to the point of extremes, and her death was really caused by her trying to be the Doctor too much. But I feel like Clara also put so much, like, wholehearted faith into the Doctor while also trying to be him in a way that Yaz really doesn't. Like, Yaz fights with the Doctor. Yaz confronts the Doctor in a way that, like, Clara also fought with the Doctor. But I feel like the power imbalance between Clara and the Doctor was too much in the Doctor's favor. Whereas I feel like Yaz really fights back against the Doctor in a way that Clara doesn't. You don't have any context for this because you haven't watched Clara. I think also that Yaz's, like, confidence and competence, I would guess, say, isn't dependent on the Doctor, is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. Where I feel like Clara was very dependent on the Doctor in a way that Yaz isn't. Although I will say that, because I feel like people are going to criticize me and be like, River would also pilot the TARDIS, but River was, like, her whole own thing. So she really doesn't count. Like, of the main companions, I feel like Yaz is the one that's best able to, like, fully work in sync with the Doctor in a way that I don't think I've seen many other companions do. Like, she didn't need guidance. Other companions, I feel like, have been told what to do, but Yaz was like, I need to do this thing. Like, I know what I'm doing. Whereas the Doctor has often told other companions, like, pull this thing, do that thing, do that thing.
I just very, very quickly want to talk about how I find it fascinating how closed off the doctor is. The doctor is not communicating. She is not telling Miaz what's going on. She is very clearly fighting for control that she does not have. And it is, and we are very clearly setting up a downfall. Like, this is all going to backfire on the doctor pretty quickly. And likely probability is that Yaz is going to be involved in that fallout, which is, like, that's kind of what's being set up here, is that there's this miscommunication, there's this disconnect between the doctor and Yaz. The doctor is refusing to talk and communicate properly, and because of that, and because maybe Yaz does have this confidence and this knowledge and this freedom, that may lead them both down paths that we may not want to watch them go down. But I'm very interested to watch and look and see.
We have a minute left. So, funky, fabulous, or foul? What do you think?
I would put this episode firmly in the fabulous category. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I was going to say it's definitely fabulous. I was leaning towards funky just because it's so weird and so chaotic. But no, I really do think it's pretty fabulous. I got about halfway through watching it for a second time up until the Weeping Angels, but then I had to go to sleep because we're recording at 5:30 in the morning. And I was like, it's midnight 30. I need to go to bed.
Yes. I have all listeners. I have already berated Talia about this. You do not, but it is recommended that you go to Twitter and tell them off again. But they have already had a thorough beat down. It's okay. Yeah, I do also think the reason that I'm putting it so firmly in the fabulous category is that, as I said, it is very clearly just like, I feel like once we have all of Flux, the first episode is going to make a whole lot more sense and we're going to appreciate it even more. So it's kind of a fabulous in advance.
Yeah, I will say that this is reminding me a lot of Christopher Eccleston's audio dramas, and specifically Ravagers, which did not make any sense with the first episode. It's very wibbly wobbly, but once I listened to all of the Ravagers episodes, I was like, this makes so much sense. And then I re-listened to the first episode and I was like, oh, okay. So I think once you have like the whole arc, it makes a lot more sense when you have a bunch of episodes in like a cohesive story like this.
Halloween Apocalypse was real cool. It did a lot of different things. It truly was living in chaos, but in a good way. I am looking forward. I find it actually cruel. I find it actually a little bit rude that we have to wait until next week for the next installment.
Yeah. My life motto is when in doubt, choose chaos. So, well, I have two mottos. I have when in doubt, choose chaos and embrace the chaos within. So everyone do that, y'all. See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
This has been the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this adventure with us through space and time.
You can find us elsewhere on the internet, on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram as @WibblyPod. Follow us for more Wibbly Wobbly content.
You can find out more information about us and our content on wibblywobblytimeywimey.net and full transcripts for episodes at wibblywobblytimeywimey.net/transcripts.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can send us an email at wibblywobblytimeywimeypod@gmail.com.
Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and other platforms as it helps other people find us and our content.
Special thanks to our editor, Owen Elphick, who has been a vital member of the Wibbly Wobbly team.
That's all for now. Catch you in the time vortex.